Next, a farewell to songwriter and performer Gene Pitney. Gene Pitney, the Rock and Roll Hall of Famer, whose hits included Town Without Pity, died today while on tour in the United Kingdom. Pitney will be remembered for Only Love Can Break a Heart, The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, and 24 Hours from Tulsa, among many others. He died in his hotel room after a concert in Cardiff, Wales. The cause of death is not yet known. Mike McCann is a music journalist and rock and roll historian who's interviewed Gene Pitney several times. He joins us now from the studios of member station WSHU in Fairfield, Connecticut. Nice to have you today on Talk of the Nation.
Thank you, Neil. Good to be here.
I know you spent some time with Gene Pitney. What kind of guy was he?
Gene Pitney was a gentleman. He was among the many, many bright stars and huge egos of rock and roll. He was a kind of a laid-back guy. He was very much Connecticut's rock and roll superstar. And a no-frills performer who loved his music. He loved both performing music and writing music. And the other side of Gene's career, and just as important in terms of his qualifications for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, was the fact that he wrote some of the most well-known and beloved songs of the 60s, including He's a Rebel, Hello, Mary Lou, and Rubber Ball.
He's a Rebel, of course, a huge hit from the Phil Spector factory. And then that other song was made a big hit by the Everly Brothers. That's a lot of range.
Actually, Hello, Mary Lou was Ricky Nelson, and Rubber Ball was Bobby V. That's okay.
Yeah. Nevertheless, and still a lot of range.
Oh, tremendous range. You talk about vocal range. Listen to the end of his single, I'm Gonna Be Strong. It's almost operatic. The man had an amazing voice. He was right up there with Roy Orbison and Jay Black as the rock stars of the 60s with the greatest vocal range and maybe the most powerful vocal range.
In a 1998 interview with NPR's Leanne Hansen, he talked about his voice and particularly the way he used it on the song Every Breath I Take. Let's listen to the tape.
I mean, at that time, everything was recorded live. So every time they had a different idea and said, well, no, that was good, but let's do it this way, that meant I had to sing it again.
Huh.
So by the time they finally got to where they were happy with it, I had run out of pipes. My throat was just a wreck. So when I do the falsetto on the end of that song, it's not because I wanted to, and it wasn't even planned. I just ran out of the power to do the full note, and I had to do something. It was coming up quick. So I just jumped into a falsetto ending.
And not only do you hear that wonderful falsetto, but boy, that sure sounds like Phil Spector violins there in the background.
Could well be. Phil and Gene were friends from the Brill Building scene in New York. Gene, as we mentioned, was already a popular and respected writer in addition to his recording career, and he did some Spector sessions. So no surprise at all that there'd be that Spector touch. Mm-hmm.
The Brill Building, really the epicenter of what was then known as Tin Pan Alley and the songwriting industry. Is that where Gene Pitney came into the business?
Well, he hooked up with Aaron Schroeder, who was one of the Brill Building song publishers, and Gene became part of that community, as we mentioned. He wrote songs for other artists. He also became very close with Burt Bacharach and Hal David, who were part of it, mm-hmm. Barry Mann and Cynthia Wilde, who wrote I'm Gonna Be Strong, and many other songs that, again, Spector's artists recorded. So he was part of that New York extended music family that we do call the Brill Building.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Mike McCann, a music journalist and rock and roll historian, about the late Gene Pitney, who died today in Cardiff in Wales after a concert. We don't yet know the cause of death. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. At what point did Gene Pitney, though, take that songwriting success and manage to translate it into being a star himself?
Well, actually, his careers paralleled each other.
Hmm.
He began having his careers together. 61 through 64 were his biggest years, both as a writer and as a performer. Although he continued to tour the country, he was visible almost every summer as one of the headliners on the Dick Clark Caravan of Stars tour, where he helped introduce such artists as Gary Lewis, Dobie Gray, and the Supremes to the U.S. audience. In fact, Gene can in some way be given credit for breaking the Supremes in the summer of 1964.
Really?
It's a great story about how, yes, the Supremes were booked onto the Dick Clark Caravan of Stars tour, in which we consider the Supremes going from worst to first, unknown at the time. They were almost forced onto the tour by Motown head Berry Gordy, who told Dick Clark that if he wanted to bring aboard his new hot soloist Brenda Holloway, he'd have to accept the Supremes for a very small rate, of course, as kind of the other part of the deal in order to get Brenda Holloway. Well, Dick Clark agreed, and while that tour was going from coast to coast in June and July and early August of 1964, the Supreme single Where Did Our Love Go was released, went to number one right during the time when the Supremes were at the beginning, the opening act on this 12 or 14 act tour, and by the end of the tour, Where Did Our Love Go was number one, and the Supremes were closing the show every night.
Yeah.
That was a tour that Gene Pitney was the nominal headliner for.
Yeah, and a lot of people aren't going to remember who Brenda Holloway was either. Here's an email we got from Susan in San Antonio, Texas. The very first album I bought for myself was a mono, not a stereo, best of album of Gene Pitney hits back in the mid-1960s. I still have it, she says.
Great music. It holds up very, very well. Hopefully, if the vinyl's in good shape, maybe it's got some real value as a collectible on the MusiCore label.
Yes, indeed. Now, Gene Pitney, interestingly enough, a couple of his biggest hits, Town Without Pity, we heard a little bit about that before, and The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, they were the theme songs from a couple of pretty big movies.
Well, the Man Who Shot Liberty Valance really wasn't, because John Ford, the director, didn't want a theme song. And in an interview a couple of years ago, Hal David, the lyricist for that song, with Burt Bacharach, said that they were basically hired by the movie studio to write what he called an exploitation song.
Hmm.
They were hoping it would be the closing or opening theme of the movie, but John Ford, certainly not a rock and roller, not of the generation of Gene Pitney and Burt Bacharach and Hal David. John Ford said, I don't want a rock song, a pop song in my movie, and so the song was never included, was never mixed in, but in effect became a 3-minute commercial for the movie and did very well on the radio.
Oh, similarly, Johnny Horton's Sink the Bismarck was never part of that movie either.
Some of the directors, Elda, you know, they didn't want our generation to come in and if you will, taint their product.
Well, nevertheless, the Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, boy, if you've never seen that movie, John Wayne, Woody Strode, Jimmy Stewart, terrific movie. Go rent it tonight. And Lee Marvin, of course, is Liberty Valance himself, one of the truly evil roles ever time. But Gene Pitney, I did read that he was the first pop star to sing at the Oscars.
Exactly. 1962, he was there and very, very nervous. Gene told me in one of our interviews how nervous he was to be up there in front of Bob Hope, who was hosting the show, and all the glitterati of Hollywood, including Marilyn Monroe in the audience that night. And he had to walk down the stairs on the set, I guess, from singing his song to heading off towards Bob Hope, and he was so afraid he was going to fall down the stairs and look like an absolute clown, but fortunately, Gene did great, and he was the first rock and roll performer ever to be featured in an Oscars telecast.
Now, he was, in later years, still very popular in Europe, toured frequently. As if you were joining us later, he died in Cardiff in Wales in his hotel room earlier today, or I guess after a concert last night. What was his appeal there, do you think?
Well, Gene, besides having tremendous appeal to the British rock and roll fans, where he toured at least a month every year, much more so. In fact, in the last half dozen years, Gene appeared far more frequently in the UK than he did in the US. But he also sang in a number of foreign languages. He was very popular in Italy for many years. In fact, he sang a number of songs in Italian at the prestigious San Remo Music Festival. So Gene was comfortable in a number of different languages. That helped to maintain his appeal in Europe. And of course, come 1990, Gene had the only number one record of his career in the UK, singing Something's Got a Hold of My Heart along with the British vocalist Mark Almond. That was in 1990, 25 years after he basically fell off the American charts.
Mike McCann, thanks very much for being with us today. We appreciate your time.
Thank you, Neil.
Mike McCann, a music journalist and rock and roll historian. He joined us from the studios of member station WSHU in Fairfield, Connecticut. We'll leave you with one of Gene Pitney's favorite songs, If I Didn't Have a Dime. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.
Wouldn't mean a single thing, even though you're standing there. Ruby lips and golden hair. If I didn't have a dime, and I didn't take the time to play the jukebox. My darling, how I bless that little jukebox. Oh, love songs that they sing wouldn't mean a single thing, even though you're standing there, ruby lips and golden hair. If I didn't have a dime and I didn't take the time to play the jukebox.